Hello, and welcome to this week's episode of the Well Women Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Laura. Today, I am really excited. We are talking all about mental health, workplace wellness, social media, and so much more. I am with my friend, Ashley LeClaire. For those of you who do not know Ashley, she is the owner of ALC Wellness and is dedicated to supporting individuals in reaching their wellness goals. Ashley offers one-on-one coaching as well as group sessions and workshops on various wellness topics. Hi, Ashley.
Hi, Dr. Laura. Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited.
Thank you for being here. I'm really excited to get your expert opinion on all the things that we're talking about today because I know this really is your niche. Tell me a bit about yourself.
Okay. Well, I have always, for as long as I can remember, considered myself a mental health and wellness advocate. That looks very different over the years. However, it seemed to be pretty consistent in the fact that I have dedicated my life to supporting others on their wellness journey. I personally have battled depression and anxiety for most of my life, pretty much as long as I can remember. And I had to do some really extensive personal work, and have really dedicated a lot of time and energy into my own wellness journey and getting to a really, healthy spot. So I took my personal experience and ultimately built ALC Wellness in order to offer affordable and holistic and confidential support to those who are in similar situations to I was when I was in my most challenging time. So I most recently have kind of worked in the nonprofit sector for quite some time, for about 5 to 6 years. And I've worked with our communities most vulnerable. I've worked with youth involved in the criminal justice system, homeless and criminalized women, human trafficking survivors, and beyond. So it's been a really great shift into owning my own business and being able to support other community members.
I love that. And I love what you're doing with ALC Wellness, by the way. I think it's great and it's something our community really, really needs. So I think it's a really, really good addition.
Thank you.
And so I know ALC Wellness focuses on a lot of different things, but one of those things is workplace wellness. So I, for those who don't really know, tell me about what the actual health issues are in the workplace.
Yeah, so a big part of ALC Wellness is workplace wellness. And the reason being that working in the nonprofit sector, doing the work that I was doing, I personally burnt out. And it was horrible. And it really shook my life to the core. And it's something that I promised myself and my loved ones and my family members I would never let happen to myself again. But ultimately, I realized that I also need to support other people in that.
Yeah.
In the field I was working with, burnout was such a high thing. It was very common to see, as is it is in many other fields as well. So what I did was I took kind of what worked for me and what I had seen work in the community. And I was like, okay, we really need to focus on workplace wellness because the health issues are running rampant within our workspace. As far as like specific health issues in the workplace, I mean, it's really things that we're seeing in our everyday lives that just trickle into work. Because although I can preach a work-life balance, like let's be real here,
Yeah.
turn it off and walk into your office.
Yep.
Things come with you. Mental health is obviously a really big thing that we're seeing in the workplace and beyond. Physical health issues as well. Like we whatever we're experiencing outside of work will ultimately come into the space with us, and then it can just be compounded if we're in an unhealthy and unwell and unsupportive workspace.
Yeah, and from a, I guess, a company owner standpoint, what is the like productivity or financial impact of having these employees that are suffering from whatever it may be, mental illness, burnout, stress, those sorts of things?
Oh, it's huge. It's huge. Some of the statistics, because I personally don't love statistics. I'm just not that type of person, but business owners love to talk numbers.
Yeah.
So, one of the biggest statistics that I think really shook me to the core and made me realize how important this is that 61% of employees are actually burned out on the job. 61%. So,
Wow.
I know personally what being burnt out feels like. And I was not productive. I was, you know, not efficient. I was probably not giving the best experience to those accessing my services. So you can imagine if 61% of us are feeling that way, if we're to shift that and to help people get healthy and well, how that's ultimately going to impact our bottom line, impact our customer experience, impact our productivity. Also, organizations that have a highly effective health and wellness and productivity program, similar to the things that I implement, are said to have 11% higher revenue per employee, which is huge when you really look at it. 1.8 fewer days absent per employee per year, which again is really big when you're looking at, especially in a small organization. And ultimately, it leads to 28% greater shareholder returns. So, you know, the benefit is seen over the entire organization, from the bottom up, from employees' day-to-day experience, customers' day-to-day experience, but ultimately to the bottom line as well.
That's amazing. And so important. I mean, obviously, business owners love seeing numbers and the bottom line, but I mean, just the mental health impact that work has on people, I think is completely underrated. I know a lot of my patients, when I'm looking at stress as kind of a factor in their overall health, a lot of it comes down to work. And unfortunately, for most people, that's something that cannot really be changed in terms of, go quit your job and go on a vacation. So we definitely need these supports in place in order to help people manage and deal with these issues. And so tell me what you do with ALC Wellness, the types of things that you do to kind of go into a workplace and implement a program. Like, walk me through your process.
Yeah. So my process is, it's really individualized per workplace. As you can imagine, every place is so different. Every field is so different. The needs are so different. The biggest thing for me is that the leadership team and the management team and the owners need to see the value. This cannot be a simple box check. If I feel like I'm being brought in just to check a box, then I'm working really, really hard to advocate, to show them the actual benefits of this, because I need buy-in from them. I need the employees on the front line to know that this investment is genuine and they're not just doing it to say that they have. Because we can feel that. Like, I've worked frontline for a long time. We can feel when this is simply something they're just bringing in to try to check a box. We need to make sure that that the leadership, the management, and the owners are really seeing the benefit. So that's where sometimes I have to go in and talk numbers and talk stats, which isn't usually my thing, but I'll do what I have to do to make sure that the employees get what they need. So ultimately, it's doing a lot of work higher up before I go anywhere near the actual organization. And I need to learn the organization kind of ins and outs as well, right? Because it's important for me to be able to offer, because what I'm doing is consulting on their wellness and helping them develop programs and implement these programs. I also get a lot of responses and information from the employees themselves at every level. So I want to know how people are feeling, what's going on for them at every level of the organization. And I do it in a way that is completely confidential. I'm not going to give away all my trade secrets, but in a very confidential way where people hopefully feel very comfortable opening up and sharing. And it's done so that we can get some really important information to be able to dive deep into the organization and then ultimately make some really helpful changes. And then once we have that information and I'm able to kind of dig through some of the data I've collected and report back to the leadership team with some of the things that I've found, then I go into huge advocate mode where I'm advocating for the changes that I believe and the employees believe to be important. And then we start to work really hard to shift the culture as a group and as a community. So there's been some really positive shifts that I've seen already with some places that I've been connecting with. And I'm really excited to see how this can change the culture within a lot of our businesses and our community.
That's awesome. And speaking of the culture within business and community, I find that when it comes to, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, but when it comes to men versus women, I feel like there's almost this mentality, and certainly some women are definitely like this as well. But with men, I feel like they are less likely to seek this sort of care. and they're less likely to, growing up, boys are always taught that they have to bury their feelings and be manly and man up, whereas women are taught a little bit better to share their feelings. So I find that with men in the workplace, a lot of time it's kind of that suck it up, you aren't tough enough if you're not powering through mentality. And so I feel like these men would actually, do you find them receptive to this sort of thing? Because I feel like they wouldn't be the ones seeking a one-on-one counsel most of the time.
I think you've hit it dead on. Like the idea of toxic masculinity has been taught into us from such a young age, but still is so ingrained in our culture. And I think that's super problematic and could talk for hours about just that topic. But especially in more male-dominated workplaces, it is seen as okay, you come to your job, you work 8 to 4, 9 to 5, whatever the set hours are, you grind, you hustle, all these things that I really hate to hear and have to even come out of my mouth. But there's just this idea that we have to just work really hard, we have to turn everything else off, we have to hit our sales targets or whatever that looks like, and don't complain and don't ask for help and just do it. And then what, right? Like, how do we continue on that track for years of our career? It's not going to work. So, I mean, I think every person is so different, and I think once they see the benefit, whether it be that they need to see the statistics and the numbers, or whether they need to just become aware of how this could personally impact them, there's buy-in for sure. And to have an organization that invests in this and that says, listen, we're going to do this, it takes away some of that pressure, be for men or women, whoever, that might be a little hesitant to reach out for personal individual support. Now they know, okay, my organization is investing in me, and I can access this support without feeling like I'm not tough because they're kind of making me do it, if that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's why I wanted to highlight that it's such a great thing to do for, especially groups of people who might not feel comfortable kind of seeking that out on their own. And also,
Oh, sorry.
when I look at like workplaces in general, and not only are people losing workplace productivity and increasing sick days from mental health concerns, but also the idea of sitting all day, the stress of sitting at your desk, it's increasing heart disease, it's increasing diabetes. So there's a lot more than just the mental health impact. It's huge, this workplace wellness. It's really mandatory in my opinion.
Absolutely. I totally agree. And I think so. My passion is obviously more of the mental health side, but I'm coming in and I'm looking at it holistically. I don't just focus on that because I'm well aware of those risks that, sitting and even, staying hydrated, having to encourage ourselves and remind ourselves to stay hydrated or to eat lunch away from our computer screens.
Oh, I know.
Things that are so ultimately have such a positive impact, but we've just been conditioned and get into these habits of not doing them. So I like to be able to be that person that can come in and shake things up a little bit and just remind people how important it is to take that time for themselves.
Absolutely. I think that's great. And how can, if people are interested in getting something like this or hiring ALC for their workplace wellness, how can they start implementing something like this now?
I think the biggest thing is to start the conversation. Obviously give me a call and I'm happy to give specifics on that. But like I said, we need the buy-in from all levels. So we need to start the conversation early. And we need to see where the leadership team sits with this. And they need to start exploring why it's important to them, and what they're hoping to get out of it, because those are the two questions I'm really going to ask right off the bat. And then once they have kind of a good grasp and understanding of where they're at with this and why it's important, then we can come in and start getting some good information from the group. But ultimately, there's simple things that can be implemented in every workplace, like get your employees away from their desk at lunch. Make them, because and sure, it might seem a little strange to say you have to get out of your desk and sit and eat somewhere else, but they're going to ultimately be grateful for that. Even if it's a little stressful to walk away from your computer in the middle of the day, take 10 minutes and eat away. Or encouraging them to take breaks. You know, we are so often lately in this culture where it's so normal to just power through and to not take breaks, but it's really important and it's important for our productivity. So taking 10 minutes away, although it might seem like that's 10 minutes of lost work, ultimately it's going to impact their productivity so much more. It makes it so worth it. So just, you know, encouraging these small little shifts to kind of get by until you can start implementing something bigger.
Yeah, and it sounds so easy, like eat away from your desk and take a break. But the amount of patients that I have that skip meals because they just keep working and eat at their desk.
Yeah.
And so I actually have to tell myself. And when I was in school, actually, I used to, I forget what the website's called, but you can go on and set certain timers on your computer and download certain apps that actually, after a certain amount of time, black out your computer and won't let you do anything for a certain amount of time.
Yeah, that's awesome. I'm going to need to know more about that after.
Yeah. So I used to actually do that when I was in school to make myself take like a 15-minute break, because you literally can't, I mean, I'm sure you could like shut down your computer and turn it back on, but that defeats the purpose.
Right. So, such a good reminder. Yeah.
Yeah. So it actually made me take time, or else I would be the person that would study for 10 hours straight and not stop and not eat and that sort of thing. So I'm 100% guilty of this. I think we all are.
For sure. And we are, until we start to see how much better and easier things can be when we take frequent breaks and when we're taking care of ourselves and when we're, you know, doing self-care within our days, we start to see the difference. And then I think we start to break out of some of those habits. Hopefully, at least that's what's happened for me and some people that I've worked closely with.
Absolutely. And so on that kind of note, not the workplace wellness, but the self-care train that we're all on, I really wanted to dive into this topic. I know that this is something that you talk a lot about, I talk a lot about, is self-care. And so I wanted to kind of pull apart the idea of, let's define self-care. Let's talk about what self-care really means. And what is, I want to challenge the thought that self-care is having a bubble bath or getting your nails done or going out for wine or that sort of thing. I want to challenge what that actually means.
Yes, that's huge. And so for me, just to kind of start at the beginning of what you asked, I think self-care for me is, and what I preach, is doing what your body needs. Okay.
Yep.
So what your body needs is so different every moment of every day. And it's becoming self-aware enough and mindful enough to listen to your body and figure out what it needs. So for some, you know, that's, for me, a lot of the times it's rest. Like rest is my thing. And like rest looks very different. Rest can be sitting on the couch for 5 minutes, just taking a break. Rest can be going to bed at 6 p.m., whatever. Like I have had to just accept the fact that my body needs a lot more rest than some other people that I know. And that's totally okay. But yeah, the idea of self-care needing to be these like lavish things where you take so much time out of your day and have to buy all these things for it. You know what? It's been put into us. And, you know, when I got these notes for this podcast, I kind of laughed at myself and thought, you know what, crap, I think I'm kind of feeding into this idea that that's what it needs to be, because that's what I post about. But I also believe that I also post about some other easy self-care things, but like we need to break that down, because if I'm posting about, you know, self-care being a midday bubble bath, which I did recently, like that's not for everyone. But that's what my body needed in that moment. That's what I craved. That's what I wanted. I wanted warmth and I wanted 10 minutes to myself. Right. So it's like, we have to really be identifying, is this what my body needs? Because going out for dinner or a glass of wine with your girlfriends can, sure, we could maybe label that self-care, but if we deep down look at what our body needs, is that actually what it needs? Does it need to be in a super stimulating place? Does it need alcohol? Does it, you know, or is it just the fact that you have labeled that as self-care and you want to do some form of self-care, right?
Yeah. And I think there's a big difference. And I think the bubble bath is one thing versus going out for wine or drinks or whatever else. I think we're really diving into like, are there harms with these forms? Like, are they really self-care, or are they almost just putting a blanket over the actual issues and letting us kind of, again, that power through, forget about things?
Yeah, that's actually a really interesting way to look at it, for sure. And I think if we're thinking of, again, if we're thinking of self-care as checking a box, that's where we get into these types of problems of blanketing something and just, you know, if we're taking a moment of self-care to forget about our problems for that moment, sure, that can be okay every once in a while when we need it, but ultimately we need to be investing time and energy into building positive coping skills so we don't need to just self-care to get away from our problems. You know,
exactly. Yeah.
We just to support our bodies, but we still need to be dealing with our issues.
Absolutely. And I think there's a balance, and I'm not trying to say there's anything wrong with having a glass of wine here and there and decompressing at the end of a week.
Yeah,
I love a good glass of wine, but I think that we get confused. And I think the glam, like you mentioned, like the glam of it all, the luxe of it all makes it seem like that's the way to go. And actually I find, in my own practice, when I'm talking to patients, a lot of the things that we're talking about, a lot of the core things that we talk about foundationally are diet and exercise, right?
Yeah.
Those are the two foundations. And I find so many times I am struggling discussing with cooking healthy meals or eating healthy foods or moving your body. And I hear, I don't have time. I don't have time. I don't have time. And so I actually pose the question, well, part of what I think your self-care looks like is meal prepping. Mm-hmm. Part of what I think your self-care looks like is moving your body, because that is what your body needs. And at the end of the day, when we're looking at your digestive health, your hormonal health, your mental health, you need to be eating healthy foods. And if the fact that you don't have time and you're getting fast food every day is the hindrance to all of that, then you're doing your body a disservice, and your self-care shouldn't be sitting on the couch, or it should be maybe buying. And I even say to people, maybe your self-care is subscribing to like HelloFresh and getting meals sent to you that are healthy, so you can start on that track. Because, and again, when we talk about meal prep, I have this conversation with people every day about how meal prep does not have to be Instagrammable. It does not.
You should see what it looks like after I meal prep. It is not Instagrammable.
No, my meal prep is, and it's not even really, I wouldn't even call what I do meal prep. I would say I build foundation so that I'm ready to eat for the week. So what that means is like, I might make a batch of quinoa. I might make a bunch of boiled eggs. And so what I'll do is I'll like take that quinoa, I'll cut up veggies, I'll put it in the quinoa. And then I'll put, I don't know, a can of chickpeas, whatever else. And I'll keep that in a bowl so that when I go to make my salad the next day, I scoop the quinoa and the veggies. I put it on top of my greens and I grab my dressing and I go. So that's an easy meal prep. And I say to people, add that in as part of your self-care so that's what your self-care can look like. And you still can go out for a glass of wine and you still can meet up with your girlfriends. And I highly encourage you do. But I think that we need to reframe what, and like you said, what our body needs, and not be just kind of letting everything be, like I keep saying, blanketed by the things that you want, let's say. Mm-hmm. Like, I want to binge on chocolate. I want to, and that's okay here and there. That happens. I binge on chocolate. It was just Easter. Yeah. Like, it's fine, but it's all about just recognizing those feelings and understanding if it's an emotional want, if it's a need for your body. And those are the things in differentiating that, right?
Absolutely. And like it's so true. And if we go back to like Instagrammable moments, like if we are self-caring for the simple aspect to be able to snap a picture and put it on Instagram, like we need to look deep at that, because that's not what your body needs at that moment. And I look at meal prep, like meal prep might seem like a huge headache for some people, but you're totally right. It makes life much easier later, like during the week, but also like crank your music, open your windows, you know, have your girlfriends over, whatever that looks like, to make it more enjoyable for you if it's not, because it's ultimately going to make your life easier and less stressful. And that is what self-care is all about.
Yeah. And when you eat well, you feel good. And when you feel good, you do better things for yourself. And it spirals. And I always say to people, we need to like put a stake in the wheel that keeps on turning. Like, we need to stop it at some point and do something. Because if you stay in this pattern of not eating well, not moving, feeling like crap, doing crappy things, doing things that aren't good for you, feeling like crap, eating like crap. You know what I mean? It just, it continues. So we need to decide, okay, today's the day we're going to change one thing. And you just decide what that one thing is. And so if that means I'm going to pre-cook my chicken and I'll just have that with with other kind of easy go-to things. Buy pre-cut veggies. Do things that are simple, but you can still do things that are healthy, right? So I think that redefining what self-care looks like and being able to be self-aware of when we're doing something that isn't serving our body, but it's serving our emotional needs for that second.
And you know what? It takes a lot of time and it takes a lot of work to be able to identify that. And the work that you have to do to be able to identify that you're coping with food, it hurts and it's hard and it's not easy to just all of a sudden wake up and open your eyes to why your self-care patterns look like this or why your coping
No.
skills are the way that they are, right? So, and I really empathize with that. And I still like struggle with it every single day that we need to identify our coping skills and how it's kept us alive until now, but how much better our life can be if we shift it.
Absolutely. And I completely agree. And that's why a lot of when I see patients, it's a lot of, okay, now I want to refer you to a therapist or a psychologist, or because you need to do all of that work in order to be holistically healthy. So I think that's a really, really good point. On the note of social media, let's talk another kind of fad thing I hear a lot about are social media detoxes. And so that can be putting your phone away, that can be staying off Instagram for a number of whatever days, hours, whatever. My first thing is, do you think that we need to be detoxing from social media for our mental health? My second thing is about, what about people like yourself and me who our businesses thrive on social media? My business requires me to be present on social media. I have trackers and I have stats and I follow, so which could be an unhealthy thing on its own, but I want to get your feedback on how you feel about this, from a personal level, from a business owner level, from every single level. Tell me everything.
Oh gosh, this is a big question because I have so many feelings about this.
Tell me all your
I'll start
feelings.
with as a business owner because that's probably the easiest thing to just get off. So, as a business owner, social media is hard.
Yes.
It is exhausting. It takes a lot of my time, a lot of my energy. And also with the type of business that I'm running and what I'm trying to create on my social media channels, sorry, I'm being really vulnerable and I'm being really open and I'm sharing myself and I'm sharing my life and I'm sharing my struggles and I'm sharing my journey. And that takes on a whole nother role of just running a business account because I'm putting my whole self out there and it's exhausting. Sometimes I wake up and I feel like I have like this vulnerability hangover where I'm like, whoo, like I just showed all of this out to all of these people, but I wouldn't change it for anything because that's what I'm trying to create. And I want people to know that social media can be a platform for those types of things. So as a business owner, yeah, it's exhausting. We constantly have to be thinking about content and all of these things. But on the other hand, and I actually made a story about it yesterday, like as a business owner, I also need to be practicing what I'm preaching in a sense that some days, some weeks, some months, whatever, this isn't going to work for me. And I need to be able to really practice what I preach and say, like, right now isn't a good time for me. And I'm still here and I still care about you, but my content isn't going to run as often because I'm focusing on other parts of my life. Because if I expect you to do that, I better well do it myself too, you know? So for me, I'm trying to find that balance between staying active on social media because you're right, my business is thriving there. That's how I'm finding people that want to work with me. That's how I'm making the impact. But also being able to say, this is too much for me right now. I need a break.
And I would completely agree with that. I think from my business perspective, I don't have to put myself out there as vulnerable as you do, because of the context of our business. I think sometimes, I mean, admittedly, I can hide behind that. I can hide behind a lot of facts and a lot of other kind of types of content that I don't have to show all of myself. So it leaves me feeling a lot less vulnerable than someone in your position, in the type of work that you do, where you almost have to be vulnerable to, it's part of your business. And the second thing about that is, I actually find that I feel the most vulnerable when I'm doing a story or a video or even a podcast. If I do a podcast, I mean, by myself, But even with people, I mean, you feel when you're putting yourself out there, you feel vulnerable. And also, when we're doing, for example, when you're doing a story or an IGTV or even a live, a lot of people won't chime in because they're just watching you. They don't want to interact, or they have nothing to add or nothing to say, or they don't want their name to be on your live video saying XYZ. And so you feel like you're speaking to nothing, and it really makes you feel vulnerable, until you actually hear feedback from people saying, "Oh, I really like your information, and thanks for sharing that. Oh, I like
Yeah,
that."
that's
But
changed the game for me, for sure.
yeah, but when you're actually doing it, you're like, "Oh my God, nobody hears me, nobody sees me. I'm just a weirdo talking to myself. I don't know what's happening." So that's that vulnerability piece, and we'll get to that, but I want to kind of jump back because I want to hear about detoxes from a non-business perspective, and I know I changed the conversation, but continue.
No. Well, so yeah, from a personal perspective, personally, with me and social media, I was finding that I would get into these deep, creep sessions. I was scrolling and scrolling and scrolling, and all of a sudden I would like snap out of it and be like, oh my gosh, why do I feel so horrible about myself right now? Right? Like, why am I questioning every decision I've ever made in my life? Why am I questioning, how my hair is styled today? Like, all of these really silly and stupid things that were simply based out of, really looking at other people and trying to compare myself, trying to compare where I am in the stage of my life, what my body looks like, what activities I'm doing, all of these things. And it's exhausting, and it was making me slightly crazy. Like, I was like just spiraling, and I think so many of us do that. It's like we're constantly comparing, and we're constantly thinking, I should be doing more, I should be doing this, I should look like this, I should have this, I should wear this. And it really took away from my authenticity, and it really I struggled for a very long time with that. And what I found I needed to do was actually curate my social media to better fit my needs. So personally, for detoxes, I feel like whatever works for you, whatever works for you. But if we're just detoxing to then go back to the same patterns, I don't love that idea. Like, if you're just going to delete Instagram or get off it for a week and then go back and binge like crazy and go back to your same patterns, like, why? Right? So for me, what I had to do is I had to unfollow everything that was making me feel off. If it made me question anything in my life, if it made me feel bad about myself, if it made, any of these things come up for me, I would unfollow. I still to this day do that. So for me, I was able to take the things that weren't making me feel good and say goodbye, and then to start following people and businesses and brands and things that fit into more of my values and how I wanted to feel. So now when I scroll through, instead of seeing these beautiful supermodels that clearly are working out all the time and have professional chefs and all this great stuff and lots of Botox and all these fun things, I'm seeing real people being vulnerable, sharing their stories that make me feel so much better about where I am in my life, because I'm not comparing. I'm just fitting in with a group of people with similar values. Does that make sense? Am I making sense here?
No, I think that's really important, and I think that's a really good way. I agree. If we're gonna just take a detox to go right back, it doesn't really make much sense. I do, however, think there's something to be said about, yes, not following things that don't make you feel good, not following people that don't make you feel empowered. I think that's a huge thing to start to do. But I think also understanding, and we're gonna talk about this when we talk about the impact on youth, because I really want to get into that because I know you are big on that. But what about understanding and having a better idea that Instagram is in fact a highlight reel? Facetune is actually the most downloaded app. Presets are something that most people use. And so what about understanding those factors as opposed to, I don't know, just unfollowing people, let's say.
Yeah, I think obviously we need to. Okay, so I think most of us understand that filters are a huge thing, and that, we're constantly seeing people just highlighting the positives of their life. But personally, like, that hasn't made it easier for me. That hasn't worked for me. That might work for other people, but it hasn't worked for me. But it is really important, I think, to do the work underlying that, to figure out, okay, even though I know that these filters, these are filters, even though I know that they're just posting about all the positive. So what's going on for me underneath, and how can I work through that? So yes, I totally agree. You know, unfollowing, it's just a piece of the puzzle. It's just something that I found was a really quick and easy way to stop feeling that way. But ultimately, yep. I had to look really deep into, where are these feelings coming from? Why am I feeling these ways? And how can I work through that myself? So that, again, I'm not just blanketing it. I'm not just saying bye to these people that make me feel shitty. I'm looking and thinking, why am I feeling this way? And how can I work through it, so it's not something that stays with me for the rest of my life?
Absolutely. And on that note, I want to get back to business in a sec, but I want to talk about the latest. So do you have the latest Instagram update? Have you seen it?
Is it the one with no likes?
Yeah.
So I haven't been on Instagram yet this morning, and I'm pretty sure my phone just automatically updates things. So I haven't experienced it yet.
So I actually saw it yesterday. And I actually noticed, because I have both a personal and a business account.
Yeah.
I noticed that the update didn't happen to my business account. My business account, I can still see all likes. I can still see my likes, all that sort of thing. But my personal account, I can't. So when you're going through your feed, you're just seeing, you know how you see the pictures of people who are liking things?
Yeah.
So you'll see picture, 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 and others is what it looks
like. So there's no total number.
No. And so what are your thoughts?
I mean, I think it's kind of great. I think it's great because so many of the times our self-worth is tied into how many people we have liking our posts. Like, yeah, the amount of times, no offense to my girlfriends that are listening, they'll be like, I made a post, go like it. And yeah, like, that's whatever, like that's just, but it's like our worth is tied to how many likes we get. And to not have that advertised is kind of a cool thing, I think, because it's going to make a huge impact on, I think, why we post. It will impact, yes, why we post, how we post, and how we're feeling about our posts. So I'm going to kind of transition a little bit into the youth side, but I've done a lot of work with youth, and continue to do a lot of work with youth around social media, safe social media use, all of that stuff. And the youth, well, even us at our age and our generation, are so tied into these likes, and they quite often make not great decisions on what they're posting just to get that like, just to get, yep, those followers, just to get that form of attention, because that's what they know as the norm right now in their culture, in their community of young people. So I think,
okay,
removing the total likes will hopefully shift that quite a bit.
Yeah. And I completely agree with this. I personally can't relate. I know from a business perspective, it's nice to see likes and whatever else, but from a personal perspective, I can't really relate to posting certain things because of likes, because I don't really care. Do you care? Like, real talk, do you care?
Oh yeah. Yeah, I do. Okay. I don't really use my personal account much anymore, because honestly, just having my business account is more than I need.
Yeah,
so
yeah,
my personal account is just sat unused for months and months and months now, and I'm probably just going to delete it. But yeah, I mean, before then, I would totally post certain things that I looked good in, or that I was doing something cool, to try to get likes. And like, you know what? It sucks to say it out loud, but come on, like, we're human. That's what we do. That's what we've been hardwired to do. But even with my business, or maybe even especially with my business,
yeah,
when I'm posting things, I want to know that it's impact. It's a different reason why I'm looking for likes here, though. I want to know that I'm impacting people in a positive way. I want to know that people are engaging with my content. So likes help that.
Yes.
Likes help me know that I'm on the right track when it comes from a business perspective. I'm not posting on my business to say, like, I want to feel good about my likes. I want to feel good that my content is impacting you.
Yeah.
But I also think too, what this lack of total number of likes might do is, I think a lot of the times we, and correct me if this isn't something you do, but we see people as more legit, for lack of better, mm-hmm, words, when they have more likes. So like a business account,
yeah,
if they have more followers and more likes, it's quite often they're seen as more legit.
Yeah,
right?
Absolutely.
So I'm interested to see how this shifts things, and I hope it really shifts it in a positive way, because small businesses like mine, I'm not getting a huge amount of likes, and that's okay because I want the followers I have to be engaging. But for other businesses that have a huge amount of likes, like I don't know how this is going to impact. I hope it shifts it to people feeling more connected to the smaller businesses. I really do.
Yeah, and I think that I really agree with you with my personal account. Like I said, I don't really care and I've never really cared. But with my business account, I really care. So maybe the lack of caring on my personal
Right.
account has like really
It's
has
doing good
translated to my business because I use, like I said, I use trackers, I use follow trackers, I look at statistics and it's and you know what? I say it's not my self-worth, but I feel like I've tied my self-worth to my business because
Of course.
ultimately, our businesses are us. And so
Yeah.
when somebody doesn't like something you post on your business, or again, watch that video, when you've put yourself out there and you've been vulnerable and people don't respond, that can actually impact your self-worth. And I find that with the likes, a lot of people are outraged because they're a lot of people make money off Instagram. And the way you make money off Instagram are by a certain amount of likes, a certain amount of engagement, and you make X amount of money if you have X amount of likes per post, and people are outraged saying they're not going to be able to make money off Instagram if they don't show the likes. And I think that I guess I understand that. I understand that like it is some people's full-time job and that's okay, but I think that like you still can see your likes per post if you go on to it. If I click on my own post and I can actually look at the number. So you could technically like screenshot that and send that to companies. Like I don't think it's a big hindrance. I feel like people are making it a bigger thing than it actually
Yeah,
is.
I think so too. I think the ones that are really tied into their self-worth, into these likes, are putting a little bit more of a fight up, I think.
Yes.
Especially those that make money off Instagram, like all the power to you. Does anyone want to pay me for 42 likes on a post? Because I'll take
Yeah,
it.
for
But
real.
like I think the ones that are up in our, I mean, change is really hard for anyone,
Yep.
right? So, and I feel them. If this is your livelihood, if this is your business, then I get it. But Instagram will find a way. Don't worry. Like they're listening. They're probably listening to us right now.
Yeah.
They'll find a way to figure it out. Like it's okay. We don't need to forget about it. Let's
Yeah.
see the positive in
Yeah,
the
and I
situation,
think
right? There's going to be lots of it.
yeah, and I think that Instagram, their main, I think they're changing it because their goal is, like you said, they want us to post more. They want us to be more engaged with the app. They want us to not worry about, and I don't know if you have young cousins, do you? Or young family members on Instagram?
Not like super young, like the youngest is like 18, 19, so
Okay.
he's still, yeah.
So I have young cousins and they're about like 12, 11, 13, you know?
I work with a lot of people that
Yeah.
age, so.
So what I see is a lot of posting. I feel, and I don't understand this culture, so you probably understand this more than I do, but I don't understand this posting a photo with the caption, thought it was cute, might delete later. And
I wish I knew what the heck that was all about. It's like this weird, yeah, I don't know. If anyone knows that's listening, send us a message.
yeah,
I'd like to
let
know.
us know because I have no idea. And I always see it and I'm like, wait, why would you delete later? Like, I don't
They
understand.
think it's just a joke, Laura. Don't
No, but then
worry.
they actually delete it. No, I'm serious. So
They
they
do?
delete it and I look at and there's this phenomenon of going through and deleting your entire feed and then starting again. And I've seen so many young people. I've even seen people like in their early 20s, 18, 19, 17, that age group. I've seen them because we're closer to 30 than we are 20. So, let's all be honest here, but I see,
Thanks for
but
that.
I see, but I see that this younger group that I guess they had Instagram, Facebook, all these things younger than we did, and they do. It's very much like I see my cousin's kids who are like again 10, 11, 12. They're posting photos and like tagging, and I've seen Instagram stories that say message for a rating, or
Oh.
like this is what I'm seeing. So tell me if you know anything about that or
Yeah.
what this is.
Yeah. So the like this is cute, I might delete it thing. I thought it was just like a, I don't know, a joke, whatever.
Right.
But as far as the rating things, yeah, I've been hearing quite a bit about that. And obviously, like super concerning for many reasons for me. if we think about the impact on our self-worth, our self-talk, our mental health, that's huge. But also coming from a background of working with human trafficking survivors and seeing like a lot of this activity, a really, really high percentage of this activity happens online and happens on these apps. And when we're opening ourselves up in that type of way, we are at a really, really high risk of getting into these really dangerous situations. So it's really concerning for me for a lot of reasons. So yeah, this is a big part of the workshops and the education and the work that I'm doing within the younger community, is having these open, honest conversations around how are we using our apps? Like, and why are we using them that way?
Yeah.
You know, we, like me and you, we were in high school when Facebook first became a thing.
Yeah.
And thankfully I wasn't growing up in this life with all of these apps, because my life would have been
chaos.
And that's what we're seeing with young people, is it's chaos all the time for them. There's so much cyberbullying. There's so much, you know, dangerous and really, really inappropriate things happening on these apps. And I've really gone in a little bit of a tangent, but I'm super passionate about this.
No, I love it.
But yeah, I think what the most important thing as adults and in our age group, we need to be leading by example and showing other generations and other people in our generation, how these apps can be used for good. Like, there's so much good that can come from these apps. I've met so many incredible people, in our community from Instagram, and then met them in person, and they've changed my life. Like, it's incredible. But, you know, the negative quite often can override the positive if we're not doing it properly. So we need to lead by example, and businesses and brands like us need to be showing, you know, how these apps can be used in a positive way. And parents and caregivers and loved ones of young people, aunts, uncles, whoever, need to be having these conversations and trying to pull out of them why they're posting the way that they do, and how are these apps being used, and doing it in a way of being curious as opposed to being scared.
Yeah.
Because what I find with young people is when we go into situations with them from a place of curiosity, we get a lot better of a response. We get a lot more information, and they are much more engaged than if we go into the conversation from a place of fear. Because if we're scared, if we are reactive to the situation, they block up and they're not going to tell us anything. So we're not going to be as effective in those types of learnings for them.
And I think that when you bring up this whole topic in general, it's really good to, for people who are wanting more information, it's really good to look and see if Ashley has any seminars or workshops coming up, because I find that because of the time we're in, parents don't know anything about these apps. And like, yeah, when did Facebook become an old person app? Like,
oh gosh. Yeah. It's so funny, because I do, like, so last year I spoke to over 6,000 young people, in presentation forms, and I would always like kind of embarrass myself a little bit, because I would be vulnerable with them. And like, we talk pretty openly, and they would all make fun of me because I have a Facebook account. Like, wait, what? That was like the thing for so long. So it's this new generation. They want nothing to do with Facebook. They're on the other apps, and okay, whatever. But it's true, because parents and caregivers and loved ones aren't aware of the apps that they're using, aren't aware of how they're using them. So I do quite a few workshops and seminars, and I'm happy to support any family that needs some support around their social media use of their young people. But because I personally know, because I talk to them and I do this work, but quite often we have no idea what they're doing on there. So how can we have these conversations? How can we know what to watch for if we don't know what apps they're even using or how they're using them?
Absolutely. And I actually wanted to, you brought up, we got Facebook in high school, and like, honestly, it's mortifying to look back, like the way Facebook was set up, like
mortifying.
The wall posts, the like pictures, like I can only imagine what it would be like if I was to have social media even younger. I feel like you hit a maturity is a thing where you just like one day wake up and you're just different. Like, in my opinion, it doesn't feel gradual. It doesn't feel, you just end up looking back at things and saying, oh, that was weird.
Oh. Yeah. And Facebook is a great reminder of all the things that we did that were really weird.
And cringy, and like really cringy.
Yeah.
So I think that like, I couldn't imagine growing up in a world where I was posting selfies during my awkward phase. during a phase. Like, people are having Instagram in like grade five. It's like grade five.
Are there even awkward phases anymore, though?
I
Like,
honestly, I don't know, because in grade
why are all
five,
these young people so beautiful? Like, you need to go through an awkward phase, or I can't, I just can't with
I
you.
know. I literally grade five, I like had a bob cut and like was like chunky. So it's like, you know what I mean? It's like you just, I can't imagine being having things posted when I had like crooked teeth and braces and like bangs that were cut too far over. And it's just like, it's mortifying, honestly. And I don't know. So maybe I've blocked it out, but I don't remember when we were in high school and Facebook came up. I think we were like were we grade 10, grade 9 or 10?
Yeah, I think
Grade 9
so.
or
But
10.
we also didn't have like phones with good cameras on them. Like,
No.
I don't even think our phones had cameras on them at that time, really. Like, it was a transition to
Yeah, like
cameras.
the Motorola Razr was the phone. And
And it was the most
yeah.
pixelated camera you'll ever
And
see.
that was the one everybody had, like the pink flip one. But I don't remember any online bullying. There was surely some things we went through in high school, but I can't remember it being online.
That makes one of
Was
us.
it? Was it? And how did it exist?
Well, for me, it started to happen. My most concrete memory is definitely like more closer to grade 12.
Okay.
And it was like people would post shit about, oh, am I allowed to swear?
Yeah,
Sorry.
whatever.
Stuff about you on their wall. Or
Oh.
like they would post about you on their friend's wall, and then they would talk about you like what, remember wall to
Yeah.
wall. Anyone young listening to this, I'm sorry,
Yeah,
but
yes.
this is what we had to deal
Yeah.
with. And
Wall to
yeah, and
wall
I
is the best.
remember, I mean it was, but it also now I'm like, oh my gosh.
Yeah.
But yeah, it started to be a thing, but it was nothing like it is now, right? And it was much less anonymous because you would literally have it connected to your account,
Right.
so people could like they knew who where it was coming from and who was involved in it. There was no hiding behind things then.
Right. And so that's, I think, what I mean by that. And a lot of it, I think, I mean, unless people are really ballsy, it's a lot of it's like in written in subtext. Like unless it said, like you'd have to be digging to like find yourself. I don't remember if you could be tagged in posts back then. I don't think so.
No, I don't think
So
so.
you'd
Did you either write on someone's wall or like I don't even know if you could message privately at that
Right,
point.
you'd have to see it in some way, shape, or form. So
Yeah.
it was not anonymous. It was less in your face because people weren't allowed to send like really, really mean things anonymously. They would have to kind
Yeah,
of take
exactly.
responsibility for that. So I think it was a little bit different then. And I also
Very, very different.
and also not having phones that were like good quality. Like we didn't I don't Did we have a Facebook app on our phones? I don't think so.
Oh gosh, no, our phones
No.
didn't have apps. And
No.
we had to text in T9. Do you remember
Oh
that? Like
God,
having to press
yeah.
two like 100 times just to get a
Yep,
letter.
yep. So that's the time that we lived in. So I can't imagine,
Are we old now?
honestly. So I am very empathetic for the parents who are above our generation, trying to man these children or these teenagers who are in this time, right? And so how do you feel about kids and youth having these profiles at a young age? I guess they're not having Facebook profiles. I don't know. I thought they may be.
I think just to speak to the generation piece and parents trying to parent these children right now, our generation's a really interesting one because we sit on both sides. Like we lived without phones and without social media for a good chunk of our life, and then we're also now like super engaged in this type of
Yep.
world. So it's really interesting for us, and I think it'll be really interesting as our generation continues to have children and our generations of children grow up to see how that shifts. But for the generation a little bit above us that yeah didn't have this touch, it's really really challenging. And my thoughts on young people having these profiles as at a young age is obviously like it makes me sick because I've seen the most horrific things come from
Yep.
this. But I'm one of the very few people who have actually seen those things firsthand. I'm one of the very few people who have had to sit with young girls who have been sex trafficked and have been found online. Like in And so a big part of what I want to do is share those stories and share that this is happening in our community, because until you really see how horrible this can impact you or your child, you never get it. And I mean, of course, parents don't want to isolate their children and say, no, you can't have this app, even though everyone in your school has it. We need to be having these conversations so early on. And I think when I have children and I try to navigate this situation eventually, I'm going to teach them from such an early age on boundaries and what's acceptable, what's healthy, from a really, really young age, because we can't expect our young people to grow up seeing us on our phones constantly engaging in whatever it be, social media or email or whatever, Facebook, and then expect them to do any different. Yeah. So we really need to mimic from a really young age for these young people of what we see as acceptable and how we can advocate for ourselves online and how we can ask for help and where we can go for support. There's so many pieces to this really, really challenging puzzle. And it's not easy. And it's not like there's any baby books written about this right
now.
You know, like you can't pick up a book and learn how to parent in the digital age right now. They're coming probably, maybe there probably are a few, but you know what I mean? Like it's not new. It's still so new that there's not enough information. We don't know the impacts of these apps long-term. We have no clue because you and I are the first people really to be on these apps at a young age and to see what our life looks like throughout our life. We don't know yet. So ideally, I mean, I don't want any young people having these apps, but it's part of their culture. So we need to then empower them to make the right choices.
Yeah. And so
long story, very long.
Yeah. And I know you do these seminars and workshops and it runs a lot deeper and there's a lot of information, but what are the things parents should be worried about? Just like on the surface.
So I think the biggest thing is it's a really, really challenging thing to differentiate what is, and I would be doing, I'm doing air quotes, just, normal youth behavior versus abnormal and dangerous youth behavior, because youth behavior is a spectrum and, you know, what's normal to some might not be, again, air quotes, normal to others. So it's really hard to identify that normal behavior and that problematic behavior. You need to know your own child and you need to, trust your gut when things start to shift. So we need to be watching for how often are they using their apps? Obviously that's a lot, but we also need to be watching of where are they using them and how are they using them? So the idea for me of having young people actively using these apps in private, like in their bedroom or in their bathroom, is really, really scary to me again, because I've seen the impacts of what can happen. Because we need to be really upfront and honest that right now in this culture, sharing sexual images and videos is really common.
Yeah.
And you need to be trying to curb that. So what to look for? Obviously, looking for any shift in behavior that you see as a parent or caregiver or loved one as being out of the ordinary. And then to address that in a really healthy and safe and productive way. Making sure, again, like I said, going in with curiosity and asking them about their apps or asking them how their friends are engaging online. Use the friend term to give them that bit of an out, you know, like we can get a lot if we say, so tell me about like, has your friends ever ended up in any weird situations online? Because when they have that like safety net, they're usually going to be a little bit more honest. So, and then being aware of what new apps are coming and doing your research. So you can Google that app and there's whatever app it is, even if it's brand spanking new, there's going to be information online and you can learn what that app is all about. There's also a really, really helpful organization called the Canadian Center for Child Protection. They have a great website. They have incredible resources and they're really, really helpful for parents and young people around social media use, lots of things. Mm-hmm. But specifically there's an area for social media use, cyberbullying, intimate images, all of that stuff. So I would just suggest check it out. Whether you're a parent, a loved one, a caregiver, doesn't matter, and get familiar with what's going on in that world.
Yeah, I think that those are great tips and that's great information. It obviously goes a lot deeper in order, like how to learn how to talk to your kid about this and how it's a big process. It's a large topic. But I'm wondering, and I'm super naive to this topic, how do how do people online or these sex traffickers, how do they lure kids or youth or what are their tactics?
So that could be another like 2 hours of conversation, but I'll give you the Cold Notes version. So a big thing, so all the girls that I worked with that had been sex trafficked were between the ages of roughly about 13 to 20, 22-ish, so really young. And what's happening quite often is it's starting online, okay? And we need to think of like a young person. If they're approached by a stranger on the street, quite often we've been taught stranger danger from a very young age. The chances of us engaging with them are much lower than if a stranger engages with us online, because those conversations and that learning hasn't really been as prominent. So quite often these people are engaging with them online. Now, when you think of the term sex trafficker or pimp, quite often we have this stereotypical idea of who that is, but really, these are people, they're young people. They're not like rarely are, really older people going to engage with younger people online. Quite often, they're going to be relatively in the same age range or a little bit older. And what they do is they create and manage these social media accounts that look really appealing. So when we have someone that adds us on Instagram, for example, and we don't know who they are, like, this is a conversation I have with youth quite often. Like, what do we do? What we do is we look through and we creep them. We look at their profile picture, we look at all the posts they've made, we look at who they're following and who follows them and all of these pieces. We're trying to figure out who are they. And ultimately, we're looking at, are they cute? Do they look normal? Again, quotes. Do they look safe? Like, we're looking for these things. And if they seem like they're cute or interesting and they seem relatively safe, like there aren't pictures of guns and drugs and booze and stuff, then probably we might engage with them, right? So this is what's happening, is these people are creating these accounts to make them hit all of those targets. And what also I've seen happen is that these traffickers, I mean, I hate to give them the credit, but they're intelligent in a sense. They know how to kind of do this work. And they will go in and they will add a whole bunch of people from the same area, so that when someone is looking at their Instagram account, they see, oh, okay, he follows so and so and so and so and so and so, and this person's following them. I must know them. I'll just add them. It's not a big deal. And then they start to engage in conversation. And ultimately, what happens is they start to build this form of relationship online, and then that then trickles in. We get stuck in this cycle, and it happened really, really quick, long period of time. So that's just kind of the top of the iceberg for
Wow,
that.
yeah. No, that's really great information. And again, it goes a lot deeper than that. Excuse me. The last thing that I wanted to talk about is Instagram is a business, but talking about trolls and how to handle negative feedback and how not to let us define or let it define us.
Yeah, this is an interesting one. And really, really close, really, really close to my heart. So, it's really challenging, especially like we've talked about for quite a bit in this conversation about how our businesses are ultimately us. Like we have created these businesses that are us and that represent us, and they're, and if I'm showing my vulnerable self, I am at such a risk of feeling shame around that. So I love Brené Brown, so I talk a lot about some of her concepts, and vulnerability and shame are two things that I'm constantly working within myself, because this idea of shame, when we're most vulnerable, we're at the most risk of feeling the most shame. And this is when these kind of online trolls can hold the most power. And I'm a firm believer in trying not to give other people power, but let's face it, like you can say don't give people power over yourself, but it's way easier said than done. And anyone who has that completely mastered, I don't know if you unfortunately are lying to me or if you're just really, really skilled, but I want to chat either way. So it's really hard. Like, it's so easy to say, don't let that person impact you. Don't let what they're saying hurt you. Just brush it off. All of these things that we want to be able to do. But when they're personally attacking you at the core, no matter how much work you've done, it's still bound to hurt. And I mean, how do we handle that? I think it depends on the situation. I think it depends on you personally. I think for me, So I'll just be super upfront and honest about my situation. I unfortunately have, for some reason, developed, let's call them an online troll, who likes to send me not nice emails anonymously through my website. And so they're not giving me a chance to actually identify who they are or work through any of these challenges. And for me, when I get these emails, of course, my inner child, that person, I was bullied really bad for a long time when I was a teenager. And so initially I go back to that place. Like, it's so quick, it's so subconscious. I catch myself about 2 seconds in, but I go there so quickly and I go to that place and it hurts like hell. And then I'm able to say, okay, you know, I'm not that person. I'm, this isn't my experience anymore. I'm so much more advanced. I have my coping skills, but we go there so quickly. So for me, like if anyone I know and love was going through something similar, if someone was talking badly to someone I know and love or trolling them, for lack of better words, I would stand up to that and I would say, this is not okay. And for so long with this person who's been doing this to me, I've just been kind of rolling over and letting it go because it's really hard to navigate as a business owner as well, like trying to remain what I, you know, what is seen as professional, but also saying, you know what? No, this doesn't fit with me. This doesn't work for me. This isn't who I am, and this isn't who I want my business to be. So for me, I just kind of I had to call it out in a really respectful way, and I've done a lot of work around it, and I think that when people like us and businesses like mine are being vulnerable and are being real and are talking about things that aren't normal, so to speak, to talk about online, that can be really triggering for some. And for people who are being triggered by my content, I really hope that no one is, but that I feel like that might be the case in this point. Like, we have to look at what am I bringing out for this person that leads them to treat me this way. You know, it's not about me. It's clearly about something for them. So to be able to put in that structure and say, listen to myself, listen, Ash, this isn't about you. This is something that they need to work through and to have that compassion and that empathy for them. But also to say, but even though I feel for them and I'm empathetic, I'm not going to put up
Yeah,
with it, you
absolutely.
know?
Thank you so much for that. We've talked about so many topics, and I've loved it all. I appreciate
I
you coming and being a part of this. It's been really awesome, and I know a lot of people are going to be really excited to hear all this information. It's all information that's new to me and likely new to them. So I really, really appreciate it. I'm going to put all of your contact information in the description of the episode, but let everyone know where they can reach you, find you, follow you, look out for you, everything.
Yeah, so on Instagram, I'm alc.wellness. So you can follow me there. You can see me just being super vulnerable most of the time. My website is alcwellness.com. And yeah, either of those will take you to any way, any form of communication that you need. So, and you can always just, like, it doesn't have to be super structured. You can just shoot me a DM on Instagram. You can send me emojis, whatever. I'm always
And do you
here.
have
I'm always
any
available.
projects coming up, seminars, workshops, workplace wellness things that you want to talk about?
Yeah, well, so I'm doing some workplace wellness with some organizations. I won't get specific around that, just around confidentiality, but I do have my women's wellness group that runs bi-weekly on Wednesdays. And I'm also just beginning a first responders women wellness group, which is for all women in the first responders family. So it will run bi-weekly on Wednesdays as well. So check out my website for dates. The whole calendar's there, so you're able to see what dates fit. The women's wellness group is fantastic. Whether you are a first responder or not, you can come to either. Well, not the first responders, obviously, if you're not a first responder, but check out my website for the calendar on that. That's a really big thing. And then I've opened up my schedule as well for more one-on-one coaching sessions. So you're welcome to, you can sign up for those right online or shoot me a DM or an email to get to know me better to see
That's
if that might be
awesome.
a
So
good
I will
fit.
put all that contact information if anybody is interested in reaching out to Ashley. It would be super beneficial if you're looking for your workplace or your individual support, or if you want to be part of a women's wellness group, that would be an awesome way to kind of get your foot in the door in terms of working on your own mental health and working on your wellness. So I think that's wonderful. Thank you so much, Ashley, for joining me, and hopefully we'll get you on again soon because it's been fun.
Yeah, thank you. I'm
So
so, I'm
much
so, we
more.
have so much more we could talk about, so I feel like we could, yeah, we
Absolutely.
need to do
All
this
right,
again,
everyone, thank you for
okay?
listening to this episode of the
Okay.
Well Women podcast, and have a good day. Bye.